decarbonizing Canada's economy is a big challenge.
And while some sectors have made headway in past decades, others still have work to do.
But decarbonizing an industry is even more challenging when it's become politicized. I'm Adam Toy.
And I'm Dave McIver, and this is Why.
We continue our mini-series on the climate emergency Canada and the world is living through right now.
Last episode, we looked at how to electrify the grid as a means to reduce emissions across the country.
But unlike other countries where electricity generation is the worst emitter, in Canada, oil and gas puts out the most greenhouse gases.
Looking at Environment and Climate Change Canada data from the last 30 years, the oil and gas sector has increased their emissions, both in absolute amounts and as a percentage of Canada's emissions.
And that's on top of the recent IPCC report that stated we're going to increase the average world temperature by 1.5 degrees Celsius a decade sooner than predicted, and it could get worse if we don't rapidly decarbonize. So how did we get to this point?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think, like, first of all, your comment about the IPCC report, the science has been very clear and consistent for some time.
That's Chris Severson-Baker.
I'm the Alberta director for the Embed Institute, and I'm based in Calgary. But the delivery, like the certainty with which scientists are sort of delivering their message that we are experiencing the negative impacts of climate change right now. We're going to experience them between now and 2050, even if we do everything that we can to reduce emissions in line with the goals that Canada and the European Union and the United States have set for themselves. That message is just being delivered more forcefully, and it's kind of hard to accept in some ways that, you know, we're going to experience climate change. Our children are going to experience climate change for most of their lives. What we're actually trying to do right now is try to prevent it from getting worse than it's already going to be. One, we're trying to keep the planet from warming more than 1.5 degrees as an average global temperature by getting to carbon neutral by 2050. But that also means, you know, reducing dramatically emissions, you know, every year over year between now and then. You're absolutely right. You know, we've actually made real progress on climate change in Canada in some sectors of the economy, but that progress has been lost in a sense because of growth in emissions from other sectors. So oil and gas and transportation have essentially wiped out the gains in electricity and in some other sort of heavy industrial sectors. There's been a little bit of growth in agriculture, a little bit of growth in buildings, but it's really oil and gas and transportation that have resulted in us, you know, more or less staying the same emission level between since 2005, even though our electricity sector has really been decarbonizing quite rapidly. We've been phasing out coal in Alberta, and every other province has plans in place to phase out coal by 2030. So in Alberta, oil and gas and transportation account for half of our emissions. Oil and gas grew by 20% as a sector between 2005 and 2019 in Alberta. But the oil sands grew, you know, as a subset of oil and gas, grew by 135%. While we've been able to make progress in some sectors of the economy across Canada, now we really have to find a way to reduce existing sources of emissions from oil and gas and make a significant dent in those emissions by 2030 and then, of course, eliminate the rest of the emissions by 2050 to meet our targets.
I mean, you mentioned Alberta, but Alberta isn't the only province that has oil and gas. I noted in your recent All Hands on Deck report that came out in July that your ratings for all of the provinces in which oil and gas seem to operate, which is or have most of their operations, I should say, BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Newfoundland, you've got their transition plan is little or no policy in place And in terms of their methane emissions, they have, some leadership. Like, this isn't just an Alberta problem, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, you'll see like the emission profiles of the other provinces that have a significant amount of oil and gas in their economy, especially Saskatchewan, have had a similar experience in terms of emissions over the last 10 or 15 years. And so the province that has the highest per capita emissions is Saskatchewan, because of their oil and gas industry and their reliance on coal as their predominant source of electricity in the province. And of course, that's, you know, the electricity part of is set to change, but oil and gas is still contributing to that. And then Alberta is the second, greenhouse gas emissions per person in Canada, and that's largely because of the growth in the emissions from the oil and gas industry. The all hands on deck report was our attempt to sort of, if we're going to reach carbon neutral by 2050, Canada's goal, we need all of the provinces playing a role to help to achieve that. So we want to say, okay, well, which of the provinces have plans? Which of the provinces are actually implementing those plans? And for Alberta, we found that Alberta does at the present time does not have a target, does not have a plan to meet that target, and is really lacking any kind of real accountability around the climate measures that it has implemented. And the problem that this represents for Alberta is that, we really need to be able to attract money to this province for decarbonization of our industrial sectors. And in order to do that, we need to have a really stable environmental policy environment so that companies and investors in those companies can predict, if they make an investment, what is that investment going to do over a 5, 10, or 15-year period? And so they want to know what the carbon price is going to be. They want to know what the clean fuel regulation is going to look like. And they want to know that, those types of policies are not going to change with every election. And having a target and a plan that matches that target would go a long way to addressing that concern over predictability. We also need a plan for a time in which the world starts to implement the kinds of policies that they need to meet their climate goals, which will result in a decline in demand for fossil fuels, which will result in a decline in demand for oil and gas from Alberta. So we need a plan for how we're going to help communities and individuals adapt to, facilities no longer being in operation, no longer employing workers in the same degree, because that's an inevitable consequence of the world starting to act on climate change.
Chris, there are many different levels of government at play here. What are their responsibilities? And of course, we're in the middle of a federal election. How much can a federal government do beyond just promising a transition for jobs lost to the energy transition?
Well, first of all, I mean, I think we've been experiencing the painful process of jobs being lost in the Alberta oil patch for quite a number of years now. We've been seeing the level of investment in new mega projects in particular is way down. There really is no plans for further expansion of the oil sands, and that was one of the things that employed a lot of workers in this province. And then also, I mean, companies have been, faced with very low commodity prices and demands from their shareholders to maximize returns on their investments. And so they've been doing a lot of cost-cutting measures, and that's resulted in jobs being lost. And so those things are already happening. Those kinds of big-scale projects and other types of investments are not likely to return. What may happen, though, is we may see some jobs associated with investments in carbon capture at some of the facilities where it makes sense to do that, or in the establishment of a market for hydrogen in Alberta. and that sort of thing. So some of the there may be some opportunities associated with the need to start to decarbonize our industrial sectors. What the federal government can do, and what they really must do if we're going to meet our climate change ambition, is to invest heavily in every sector of the economy. And so one of the things that was announced in the federal government's budget was the creation of what's called an investment tax credit for carbon capture and storage, recognizing that in Canada we have a lot of sort of hard to abate sectors, and carbon capture is a technology that would be needed to decarbonize some of those sources. There's going to be demands on the federal government to go beyond that and provide even more public funding to decarbonize very expensive, existing oil sands facilities. And at some point, they're going to have to make a decision about, how much makes sense and where in the economy, to focus. And obviously, I think everybody would agree, we need to focus on the future economy, the kinds of industries that we're going to have, for which there's going to be a demand for those products, in 2030 and 2040 and 2050 in a carbon-constrained future, and not necessarily try to, keep every oil and gas facility afloat, because there just simply won't be a demand for that product in the coming years.
Chris, what does an ideal policy look like for decarbonizing oil and gas? You mentioned investing in all areas of the economy and incentives for carbon capture and sequestration.
Really what we need to do is to focus on making emission reductions, investments in emission reductions in parts of the oil and gas sector where it is, it is economic to do so, and it'll translate into a short-term reduction in existing emissions levels. And then we have to prepare for a decline in demand, and therefore a decline in the production of oil and gas from other sources. And so methane emissions, are very potent greenhouse gas emissions, and also are the most economic emission reductions in the upstream oil and gas sector. So what we need is a very ambitious target, and we need to move as quickly as possible on that. And the benefit of doing that is that any activity that continues to use natural gas while we're transitioning off of fossil fuels will emit fewer emissions, right? Because right now, when you burn natural gas, not only are you emitting the emissions associated with burning the natural gas, but you're also creating emissions upstream of your use, right? So there's emissions associated with the production of natural gas all the way along the value chain that are really quite significant. So we can address the life cycle emissions of natural gas, and then anything that we use natural gas for will be lower emitting. And this includes things like hydrogen. So if we can address the upstream emissions associated with producing natural gas, and then we can convert the methane, the natural gas, into hydrogen, which is zero emitting, that energy source has now become a low-carbon energy source. But if we don't address the upstream emissions associated with the production of natural gas, then it remains a medium to even possibly a high source of emissions. So that's one area.
Yeah, they don't have electric planes yet.
That's right. And so Alberta could provide the world with negative emissions if we were to develop that technology, and we were able to drive the cost of capturing carbon and injecting it into the ground lower, So and I think over time, people are going to become more and more concerned about this sort of what the IPCC report is saying, is that we're locked into some pretty awful climate change impacts. The only way to actually prevent that from happening for the next 30 years is to start, in addition to reducing emissions and to, achieving carbon neutrality, is to actually take those historical emissions that we've put up there already out of the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So I think there'll be more conversations about negative emissions going forward.
Wondering what we can look for in terms of pace of change towards a carbon neutral a society, a carbon neutral country. Again, looking at that Environment and Climate Change Canada data, Canada's emissions in 2019 were around 730 megatons, I believe, of CO2 equivalent. Well, let's take that 730 number, and if we have to get it down to neutral or zero by 2050, if that's our commitment and if that's our goal, should we expect a linear drawdown of emissions, or would it likely take a different shape if you were to plot it out on a graph?
I think what we should expect is sort of a wonky staircase downwards. That's because, first of all, it takes time for between when the policy is announced and when it actually starts to result in a change. So, the Biden administration and the European Union and even Canada have all indicated that by 2035, or even earlier in some places, you will not be able to buy an internal combustion engine. You'll have to, the only passenger vehicles that will be available for sale new on the market will be an electric vehicle. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, all of the major companies have now shifted all of their focus to designing the most, envious internal or electric vehicle. They're things that our consumers are going to want to have, must have, whereas in the past they were marketing to consumers, the next best internal combustion engine. But it'll take time for the for the uptake of electric vehicles to really make a significant impact on the demand for transportation fuels. But then once it actually starts to change, the change will be significant, and it'll be an inexorable decline in demand for transportation fuels globally, and that'll have a big impact on Alberta. So we might have some years here where people are looking at the price of oil and saying, well, I don't understand. I thought we were supposed to be facing a drop in demand, but the price of oil is hovering around $70 a barrel. But that effect on demand is coming down in the not too distant future, and then we'll start to see step downs as larger facilities sources of oil just simply stop producing, or they decide not to go ahead with their next phase or whatever. And because this is the kind of thing that we saw with coal plants coming offline. When coal plants were finally exposed to carbon pricing and a regulation that said, we're going to require coal plants to meet as good a gas standard or go offline, you started to see plants making plans for when they would shut down, and you end up with this sort of like wonky staircase down of emissions associated with power generation first in Ontario and then in Alberta more recently. I think that's what we can sort of expect is, things will sort of feel like they're sort of staying the same, and then all of a sudden things will start to change quite quickly. But that assumes, of course, that, governments follow through with their plans to implement those policies. And it assumes that, there's a willingness on the part of government to actually expose industry to the actual impact of the carbon price.
This Is Why is produced by me, Adam Toy, and Dave McIver. It's a national radio show and a podcast.
You can reach us by email at thisiswhy@globalnews.ca and on Twitter at thisiswhy.
If you like what you're hearing and you want to hear more, make sure you subscribe to This Is Why so you never miss an episode. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, tell a friend.
Thanks for listening. Wear a mask and get vaccinated. We'll see you soon.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.